It is October 18th, 2011. I am Steve Growick, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net, Growick.net, your source for all your pro wrestling and MMA news. And tonight, I welcome to the website a former WWE developmental wrestler. You may have seen him on the Nat Geo documentary, Slammed Inside Indie Wrestling. He wrestled independently as Danny Inferno. And tonight, I welcome Danny Inferno. How you doing tonight, Danny?
Steve, how you doing? I'm glad to be here.
Let's talk about the Nat Geo Slammed Inside Indie Wrestling that aired last month, I believe it was, that really caught my eye and I thought was a very good, well-produced documentary. How did that come together and how did you get involved in that project?
I actually went to a wrestling show in my local area for a company I wrestle for, the NWS, based out of New Jersey. I wasn't scheduled that night, but it was close by and I just went through to say hi to some people and hang out. And the promoter just pretty much said, you know, we have National Geographic here. They're scouting out for a new show, so everybody make sure you meet Brad Holmes. And he's the producer, executive producer for the show, which now became Slammed Inside Indie Wrestling. So, you know, most things you hear in wrestling, I'm like, big deal. You know, nobody's going to really care. It's never going to come through, that kind of thing. And he came up to me while I was sitting, you know, I was sitting in the crowd with a guy named Christian York, who is Joey Mercury's old tag team partner on The Independents. And, you know, we're just sitting there watching the show, and the guy came up to me and said, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, yeah. And he goes, I was looking at you. He goes, you have a good look, and something we might want to feature on our documentary. Would you be interested? And I said, sure. And he goes, do you mind if we do a phone interview? He's like, a lot of the guys I've asked in the locker room said, you've been around for a while, and you've probably got a lot of good stories to tell, and that sort of thing. I said, sure. So, you know, thinking nothing's going to happen, of course. I give him all my contact information. And a couple days later, he calls me, and what turned into a 10-minute supposed phone conversation turned into about 3 hours, and I agreed to sign on to do it. And, you know, from what I expected, it was supposed to be really just an outline of independent wrestling and, you know, what it takes to be in independent wrestling and blah, blah, blah. He loved my story about having me, you know, had been a developmental talent for WWE and have been an enhancement talent for WWE for, you know, 8 years before that. And me trying to get back on the indies after taking some time off. And he just really enjoyed my story. Plus, I made him laugh a little bit. I think that helped. And so we turned into a real good phone conversation and interview. And he invited me to the National Geographic executive offices in Manhattan. They're based out of Washington, D.C., but him and one of the other executives are there in New York City. So I went and had a meeting with them. And I really sold them on the idea of the show. And they asked me, you know, what's my filming schedule like? Can I be available? I said, look, right now all I'm doing for a living is wrestling. And they were shocked. They're like, most of the guys told us, you know, they have other jobs. I said, at this point, fortunately, I'm, you know, lucky enough to be traveling a lot and doing independents that pay me well. And that's really all I'm doing. And he was surprised by that. And he goes, this is going to be a great story. And, you know, lo and behold, a month later, they're at my house filming. They're at every independent show I'm at filming. I took a camera to Nigeria with me and filmed over there, which was, it just kept rolling from there, and it turned into a documentary. And surprisingly, you know, they filmed me at Ring of Honor and a couple of things I had been working on. And surprisingly, they told me all these different, you know, ways they wanted to go with the documentary. And if you watch the documentary, again, it's called Slammed Inside Indie Wrestling on the National Geographic Channel. Just to plug it again, it's going to air again on November 22nd this year. So check your local listings on the National Geographic Channel. If you don't have it, get it. And when edited out, I mean, I was featured on probably 60% of the whole documentary because they just really loved my story. The executives loved it, and they gave me a great opportunity to get myself back out there. And so far, I've got good feedback.
I really enjoyed it. I think it really makes you come off as a baby face. You know, here's a guy who has struggled. You talked about your demons. You were in developmental. They let you go. You kind of fizzled out, I guess. And then, you know, you wanted to make a comeback. You wanted to get back into shape. So they put you in the spotlight on this series. Also in this documentary is Zema Ion, who, of course, talks about getting an ROH tryout, and then, of course, he goes on to get a TNA contract. The only thing that was kind of missing, I thought, at the end of the show, because this was obviously filmed in the wintertime, you could tell by, you know, it was cold outside in West Virginia and the posters, but that this was probably filmed, say, in February, March, and they didn't air this until August, I believe, of this year. It didn't seem like there was any follow-up at the end. You know, it could have said that Zima Ion went on and signed with TNA. And the big question watching the documentary is what happens with you, because at the end of the documentary, you have the ROH tryout. You cut your promo with Jim Cornette. He gets goosebumps. And I tell you, watching it, anybody that gives Jim Cornette goosebumps gives me goosebumps too, because watching it, and for him to say that about you, and this guy gives you goosebumps, you'd think, boy, this guy's definitely going to get a look. He's going to get a contract, or at least get a tryout with Ring of Honor. They do television now. They're on Sinclair. They're on pay-per-view. So what happened with Ring of Honor? Why did they not bring you in, at least to give you a look-see with the company?
You know, I was told that day from Delirious, who's the booker, and I don't know if he still is, Jerry Lynn, you know, who's a good buddy of mine. Actually, I was talking to him earlier today. You know, Jerry Lynn pulled me aside today and he goes, I know why you never landed a good job. You make people look either really too good. And I said, well, then I should have a job, right, Jerry? Isn't it the guys who make people look good that should have jobs? And he goes, yeah. He goes, same as my story. Or you're going to make people look too bad because you're too good. And, you know, that was a huge compliment coming from a guy named Jerry Lynn. And, you know, a guy I really have a lot of respect for. You know, that day I was told, you know, we're going through some changes. There's TV, you know, they had just lost their TV. Sinclair was taking over and buying them out. You know, probably my biggest downfall is not following up with people. And it's just because if you want me, book me. Bill DeMott was one of my first trainers when I was 15 years old. And I always asked him, should I send out pictures? He goes, screw that. If people want to book you, let them book you one time. If you disappoint them one time, they never have to book you again. So it always stuck in my head. Is why send out your pictures? Why do this? You know, now in an age of social networking and sending out your stuff and getting it out there, and I've done that, you know, it does work to an extent to get yourself and your name out there, because there's a million wannabe wrestlers, but there's only a few real wrestlers that are out there that have talent. You know, to have Jim Cornette put me over and to have Ring of Honor, I mean, I stood out. And if you watch the documentary, I did. I'm not trying to be cocky. I'm not trying to be full of myself, but it really wasn't that hard, too. But I stick out very well. And, you know, I do think that's something that's coming up, although they have a lot of changes and other things in management that they're doing. They even told me that day it won't be till the fall, winter, because we're going through so many changes. I'm not a guy that's going to go in there and wrestle for free, as a lot of, you know, wannabe guys do. And that's pretty sad to want to make a career out of wrestling, but you're willing to work for peanuts. I know what I'm worth. I know what I'm worth to WWE. I know what I'm worth to Ring of Honor. I know what I'm worth around the world because I get flown there. I get paychecks that show me what I'm worth. I always get put against top guys wherever I wrestle. You know, a month ago I was wrestling D.H. Smith in Atlanta and get a standing ovation. I was in Atlanta last week. I'm in North Carolina next week, and I get flown everywhere I go. I know what I'm worth. So there's a difference between being a professional and being a, you know, what I call a wannabe pro wrestler or a weekend wrestler, or I've got the dream, quote unquote, that everybody says they have in this passion. This passion for me started when I was 3 years old. I'm 34 years old. I've been wrestling for 18 years. I've been all over the world. So when I get asked a question like what happened with Ring of Honor, which I get asked on a daily basis, people stop me all the time. A lot of people have seen the documentary. It's really, I think, just a matter of time. It's a matter of we're going to bring you in, but when? When, you know, Jim Cornette talked to me that day, it was, we don't want to just throw you out there in Hammerstein Ballroom and have the people on you because they don't know who you are, which I respect that. He's like, when we get TV back, we'll bring you in, build you up with a character, and then, you know, put you out there. So it's not, I don't think it's a matter of it's never going to happen. I think it's just a matter of time and timing. And of course, as always in wrestling, you know, right place, right time.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, Ring of Honor has lost Claudio Castagnoli, who's in the documentary, and they could be losing Chris Hero, who's also in the documentary. You got Colt Cabanas, who's not with them anymore, not under contract. So, you know, they have lost some major talent. And so obviously, as they are on television now and they're on internet pay-per-view, they're always looking for new talent. And of course, now that you've gotten this exposure, you know, maybe we will see you in Ring of Honor. But let me go back.
And they're looking for guys, you know, and not for nothing. Ring of Honor's got a lot of great cruiserweights and a lot of guys that are, you know, are smaller, but they don't have a guy with 18 years experience with who's traveled the world and is 6'4" and legitimately 250 pounds, not, you know, marking up my weight I'm not 210 pounds and saying I'm 250. And if you watch the documentary, I wasn't in the best shape of my life as I was getting back into it, but it was cut back down to 245 and, you know, was in shape. And I worked with Chavo Guerrero last week, and he told me I was better than 90% of the guys he's ever worked with in WWE. To get that from a Chavo Guerrero from a month before, get that from a D.H. Smith is, you know, it tells me something about my work ethic and what I'm doing in the ring. And that's something you're not going to find out of a 19-year-old kid who weighs 170 pounds who's going to work for free at Ring of Honor. Right. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Let's go back to the Nat Geo documentary. Now, they're going to re-air it on November 22nd, which I guess is a scoop. I've never seen that mentioned elsewhere. Possibility that this could be turned into a series.
Yeah. You know what? I forgot that as a question you were asking of how it left it kind of open-ended for me on the end of the documentary. We were hoping that with the rating we were getting, that National Geographic would take that and use it as a series. We already have three more episodes filmed and that are in the can waiting to go. They heavily feature me. I had given them a lot of raw footage from a tour I did in Africa. They actually gave me their own National Geographic camera with all those nice lenses and stuff, you know, to get it. I did 20 to 30 media appearances for National Geographic to promote the first one. So we got a good rating, but it wasn't exactly what they wanted as far as ratings go. I think they left it open-ended kind of to feature it, you know, again, and say, here's where he went after this, and so on and so forth. That's why you didn't get really a conclusion as of what happened to me after my Ring of Honor tryout, after, you know, seeing me on the NWS shows, which were featured. They kind of left it that way for a reason, and it was to get viewers to ask the question, what happened to this guy? Did he succeed? Did he not succeed? Fall to face of the earth, they start working more. So that's kind of where they went with it. And, you know, I thought it was done well because that's what we were hoping for, is for viewers to want to tune in again and see the next episode.
You know, what's interesting was when the documentary starts, you're running late to an indie show. So it starts off, you know, the story's about you, you know, getting back into it full time and that you want to, you know, one more shot with WWE, and at the same time, you show up to a show late. That's kind of a funny way to start the documentary.
Well, you know, that was really my fault. I'm notoriously a little bit, you know, I wouldn't say. When I was at WWE, I'm always on time. I'm always actually early. Indie shows, you know, you get a little bit more leeway. I'm usually on my ass, so it's not really a big deal. That time in particular, I was picking up my friend Luke Gallows from the airport. And we caught, I wrestled in that same building in Manville, New Jersey last week, and I didn't show up till 7:30. And it's not because I was late, but because of Columbus Day traffic. We sat in traffic for about 3.5 hours to go 39 miles. So they're like, the same building, same thing. It wasn't my fault. It's not like I showed up and, you know, without, you know, hanging out with my friends and playing video games all day. You know, we legit were trying to get there, but I had to pick up my friend at the airport and get him to the show. So here's me and him in the back of a minivan, you know, getting dressed before the show in the minivan, trying to get there on time. And luckily we made it on time. All they had to do was switch out the first match and the second match, and we were fine. You know, I do take what I do very seriously. I'm always on time. But on that case, I had to pick up their main event, which was Luke Gallows, and he was also featured in my match as well. And just so happened that we happened to be late, of course, with all luck. They're filming for National Geographic, and you even get the phone call of me calling them, telling them we're late, and then the aftermath and the aftershock of Gino Moore, the one promoter, you know, they didn't know what to do with themselves because, you know, the main event and myself are late, so.
The real drama of what goes on behind the scenes at an independent wrestling show.
Good job, because, you know, people don't know that. They don't see it. You know, all they see is the curtain and when you come out through that. But they don't see really the stress. And I think you did a great job with the, you know, promoting the promoter and seeing how much work this guy actually puts into a full-time job as a promoter, because that's all he does. And he runs some of the most successful shows. Last week, like I said, Chavo Guerrero and me had 600 people. We had a standing ovation, and it was well promoted in a great town. And, you know, he had, you know, three big names on the show, Jillian Hall, Mickey James, and Chavo. Me and Chavo were semi-main event to the girls, and we got a standing ovation and, you know, went 20 minutes and had a great match. You know, it's just, they do a great job in promoting. And that's the guy's full-time job. And I think Nat Geo delved into, you know, some things that people don't really see and might take for granted, you know, just going to a wrestling show, and they shell out really hard-earned money to see that. But there's a lot of work that goes into all that.
Yeah, definitely. If you've ever been behind the scenes before, it was a good chance to, you know, to be behind the scenes and really get the chance to get a feel for, you know, what goes on at an independent wrestling show. And then, as you said, they showed the promoter. He's making his posters and making his phone calls. And I was wondering if you said there was three other episodes filmed. Is it the same promoter, same promotions also being featured in the other episodes?
Yeah, it's pretty much they've they might have cut a character or two out of it that was on the documentary. I know they heavily featured me. They sent me a copy of the first one before it aired, so I got to see it so I could do my media. I was the only person that did the media stuff. I mean, I did L.A., Chicago, Detroit, Miami. I mean, you name it. I was on little rinky-dink stations all the way up to, you know, what would be here in New York City, Z100, like, you know, big stations. We just so much work put into that. For the most part, they took footage that wasn't aired in putting and editing together that. And then a lot of other stuff I did. I know they took Nigeria footage from what I did, another tour I did overseas, and they kept giving me a camera, you know, to film raw footage. And then it was the first documentary ever done of its kind where there's no narrator. We narrated it ourselves, if you notice that, and a lot of people don't. There's no narrator saying anything about the documentary. It's just us really talking. And it was edited in such a way, and it's Brad Holmes, the genius of Brad Holmes, the editor and producer of National Geographic, who did that. So it's basically about NWS as the indie promotion that they're using. Although I had an idea for, you know, to interject if they're going to use me, a couple different ones I use when I travel, and different ones that use me, you know, as one of their guys. Unfortunately, budgeting and stuff like that to have a full camera crew come in is very hard and very expensive. I mean, they came to my apartment for 2 days and we lit my apartment up like it was a studio. I mean, they had taken down my curtains. If you look on the documentary, I don't even have curtains, but I do have curtains. They took them down and put professional lighting up and microphones and made me move things around. I mean, my poor dog sit in her cage all day. I mean, it was just a lot of editing and a lot of stage setup just to, you know, to make it look that way. It's to answer your question, yeah, it's really using NWS as the catalyst for me. And I don't know who else they use because I haven't seen the edited versions of these. But like I said, I'm the only person who's went to the studios and met the executives and stuff like that. So I would figure it's going to feature me a lot and also NWS Wrestling.
I want to take you a little bit back to your when you signed with WWE developmental deal. How did that come about? And then who were you training with also when you were, I believe, at OVW and Deep South?
Well, I had a phone call with Jim Cornette. I, you know, I was kind of like, I had been an enhancing talent for WWE for a long time, you know, going on like 8 years, and they were using me, I mean, hundreds of times. I mean, I was on the cover of Raw magazine with the Dudley Boys, crashed through a table. They'd use me for anything and everything. And, you know, I called Jim Cornette, who was in charge of OVW, and I said, look, I'm tired of being on the indies. 2002, WWE told me they would never hire me. I had just wrestled Velocity against Chuck Palumbo. And they came back in the locker room and told me, look, we're not going to hire you. After they told me for 2 years they're going to hire me when I was done college, I said, screw this, man. I didn't work this hard for nothing. I'll do whatever it takes. So I moved myself down to Ohio Valley Wrestling on my own dime and gave my dues for about a year. My trainer at the time, Rip Rogers, had just gotten fired. Nova, who was one of my tag team partners, Mike Bucci, became one of the trainers. Eugene Nick Dinsmore was one of the trainers for a little bit. Then we got Lance Storm, Bill DeMott, Al Snow. They all became trainers. I had given it about a year, and I was up at a SmackDown taping, and I had wrestled the night before on Raw, and the next night I was wrestling Kurt Angle on SmackDown in the Angle Challenge. And I sat with Kurt for about 2 hours after we wrestled, and he's like, you just got to get signed, man. He's like, He's like, I really loved working with you. I called everything in the ring for him. I knew it was finished, and that's all I really needed. That was the night, actually, they were going to let someone beat the ankle challenge and go all the way. They decided to cut it out, and I went about, you know, 2.5 to 3 minutes with him. The next day, I was at Ohio Valley Wrestling, and I was about to, you know, for about a year there, I was working the main event. And Nova, Aaron Stevens, Idol Stevens, who's still under developmental now, he got re-signed, and a girl named Trudy DiNucci were called the Jersey Shore Crew, which Vince at one point said, I don't know what a Jersey Shore Crew is. That's never going to make money. Look how much money that's making people now. I was sitting there at OVW, and Danny Davis comes out to me, and he goes, come here. I'm an effer. I need to talk to you. Pulls me a corner, like pushes me in a corner with a clipboard. And I'm like, what the hell did I do? A week before, I had knocked out the boogeyman's teeth in practice because he was very green and turned the wrong way when I went to punch him, and I wound up knocking out all his teeth. So that was the reason that boogeyman had no teeth. I'm not proud of it. He was a friend of mine, and I felt really bad about it. That's a little cliff note for everybody. Yeah, I knocked out the boogeyman's teeth, and it wasn't on purpose. Everybody thinks I had a grudge against him. It's in Bill DeMott's book. It definitely was an accident, but long story short, anyway. So Danny Davis says, what the fuck did you do last night? And I go, nothing, Danny. I said, he goes, you embarrassed me? I said, no. I said, I had a great match with Kurt Angle on SmackDown. And he goes, good. You just got signed. I just looked at him, hugged him, walked outside, called my mom, and I said, at that point, I think it was, what, 12 years in the business. I said, Mom, 12 years it took me. She's like, what? What? And I go, I just got signed to WWE. So I sat there and cried tears on my Dodge Stratus outside the OVW arena and then walked in, and he goes, don't tell anybody. So I walked in like nothing happened. So everybody wanted to know, why did Danny yell at you? And I'm like, nothing. I just did something wrong. I'm probably getting fired, and he wants to send me home. Just working everybody. And they hired me, a guy named Mike Taylor, who's one of the best wrestlers I've ever wrestled. He's out of Atlanta. Mikey from the Spirit Squad, Joey Matthews, Joey Mercury, and Romeo Rizzelli, who was part of the Heartbreakers,
right.
Or Throbs, whatever they were called.
Yep.
We got hired that night, and I was told that me, Joey, and Romeo were supposed to go right up to TV right away, which never happened. They did. I didn't.
I guess the obvious question, I think you mentioned in the documentary that you were let go because they had nothing for you. What do you think the real reason was they let you go?
The real reason is they had nothing for me, apparently. I was pitching gimmicks out the ass. You know, they moved me from Louisville. We had the Jersey Shore Crew, which me, Nova, and Idol, and Trudy thought would make money. We really didn't. This is, you know, 2005. Now you see the Jersey Shore on TV and all, you know, Jerseylicious and all these other shows that are, you know, headline tabloid every day. You know, and me and Nova are from Jersey, and I started training with him, you know, when I was 15 years old at Iron Mike Sharp School when I first broke in. So we've been good friends for years, and we really believed in our hearts this was going to make money. Dave Lagana, who was one of the writers, he's from Jersey, and he said, I know this is going to make money, but it was just a hard sell on everybody in WWE land. So they matched up Idol Stevens with Casey James and brought them up to SmackDown. Nova went on to become Simon Dean, and then I was left. And, you know, I tried pitching all these different gimmicks, and finally I came up with a gimmick, and they're like, oh, that's cool. 5 months later, I'm at Deep South, and I pitched this great gimmick, I thought, and they're like, oh, it sucks. A couple months later, quote-unquote, Vince McMahon came up with a great gimmick for you. Bill DeMott pulled me in his office. This is your time. You're going up to TV. So they were flying me to TVs every week, and I was just sitting there, and I'm like waiting for vignettes to start. They had all these ideas for vignettes, but yet none of the writers are coming up to me and saying anything. So I'm going home every week collecting a paycheck, and I'm like, okay, maybe next week. Fly out next week, nothing. So I get to the arena, trying to think where it was, maybe Cleveland, Ohio. So I get there, and it says Mr. Anderson versus Jobber. Jobber then got changed to Danny Giamondo. Danny Giamondo had verbiage, but it wasn't the gimmick we had talked about. So I called Bill DeMott, and he was in the arena, so I called his cell. I said, Bill, I got to talk to you. So he flipped out. He goes, no, this is bull. So he flipped somebody else in my spot, he still got announced on television as Danny Jamondo, which is my real name. So on SmackDown somewhere, there is a match, Danny Jamondo against Mr. Anderson, or Mr. Kennedy, what he was called that time. And it wasn't me, though, because I got a lot of emails like, geez, you got really jacked up on a lot of steroids and you have blonde hair. And it wasn't me. I had long black hair, and I'm just kind of muscular for, I guess, an athlete. And I got nothing that night. Got sent home. And 2 days later, I'm at Deep South. I'm supposed to win the Deep South heavyweight title. And 2 hours before the show, they switched that. And some other guy was winning the Deep South title. So I went to Bill's office. This doesn't sound right, man. Taking off TV. Supposed to debut. Then someone's switching the Deep South title. Usually when you got the title in like OVW or Deep South, it means you're kind of getting called up on the road. And then you're going to work both, you know, the road and your developmental for a little bit until they see that you're good to be on the road and then pull you up full time. And he's like, I don't know. I don't know anything. You know, man, I'm here like you are. Meanwhile, he knew all along. 2 days later, I got a phone call at the middle of Friday night at about 12:15 in the a.m. And it was my old tag team partner, Mike Bulginova, who is then now part of Talent Relations. And I knew once I got the call, I just bought a house, which WWE, John Laurinaitis, told me it's a great idea to buy the house. I have a job for a long time. Even if I don't wrestle, I'm going to be a trainer and all this other bullshit. I'm getting let go. And I said, why? Well, we have nothing for you. I said, well, it was, quote, unquote, Vince's idea for this gimmick. How come there's nothing for me? We don't have anything for you. And I said, so you have nothing for me and can't let me be in developmental a little more until we find something, but you're going to let me go. When I'm telling you, I was helping train guys that were on the developmental, like Oleg Prudius, Vladimir Kozlov, Jack Swagger, guys like that couldn't even put on a headlock yet. I'm sitting there in practice training these guys and helping them out, you know, and getting them through stuff. And here I am getting released. You know, a month before when I bought my house, John Laurinaitis is telling me, yeah, it's a great investment. You have a job, excuse me, for a long time. You know, you're fine. Buy a house. So Friday night, I'm jobless, and I just bought a house. I bought my ex-girlfriend a new car, and I was making good money. I was doing motion capture for the video games and stuff, going on, you know, on the road a couple times a week. So I'm like, oh, there's thousands and thousands of dollars coming in, and that just got all cut off. So when you ask the question of really what happened, that you said they have nothing for you, that's exactly what they told me. We have nothing for you. And, you know, Mike's a friend of mine, Mike Bucci, Nova, Simon Dean, whatever you want to call him. I don't think he would lie to me. But then again, when it comes to wrestling, I mean, you never really know. It's just people working people on top of people working people. You would never really know the truth.
I guess, you know, watching the documentary, too, it's obviously you want to get back with WWE. Would you accept a developmental contract now to go back to WWE?
It's a hard question to answer. A developmental, no. I never even had a developmental. I had a booking contract, which is different than a developmental. Developmental is like a 3-page contract. My contract was like 40-something pages long with listed, you know, all your rights and privileges and percentages on video games and merchandise and all that kind of stuff. I don't think at this point I can move down to their Florida developmental and stay there for any guaranteed amount of time if they wanted me to go there for a get me in ring shape, quote-unquote, type of thing, which I already am. I would do that. With the notion that I'm staying in New Jersey right now and I'm not moving. Of course, there's always a power play there is do whatever for the company and screw you. So, it's a hard question. It would have to come to me and the money would have to be different than what I was offered. And even though I got a raise at one point, it would be so much that, you know, I'm 34 years old. I'm not a stupid kid anymore. To me, this is business. Of course, I love doing the business I'm in. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. I have a college degree, and people always ask me, how come you don't use it? It's because I love doing something different. That's a hard question to answer. Developmental would have to be something totally different to me. I look at their stuff online right now. I look at the guys they're bringing up, and a lot of it is a lot of crap.
What do you think your chances are to get back with WWE and have you had some communication with them? Have you had discussions with them? Do you kind of have a feel, you know, how they're reading you at this point so that there may be a chance they might bring you back?
You know, I've been to some WWE shows, and when I go backstage, I'm well-received. I had a meeting with Johnny Ace about 2 years ago at Nashville Coliseum, and I went to hang out, and he pulled me in his office and told me I looked great. I cut my hair short at the time. He's like, I like your new hairstyle. He's like, send me something. So I sent him something, and, you know, I never heard back, and then I emailed, and there's interest, but there's no interest. So, it's kind of hard because it's a really big game, and, a company like that, you've got hundreds of guys probably sending you stuff every week, and if I really pressed for it, there's not, a doubt in my head that I can't go back in and walk into a Madison Square Garden, IZOD Center, Nashville Coliseum, any venue around here and get a tryout because that's, I was a part of the company from 97 to 2002, then from 2003 all the way up to 2007. I'm well known with everybody in the company and well received. I don't think it would be that hard to, get a tryout and a look again. I wanted to make sure this year especially I got back into shape and was everything I said I was. And that was the biggest thing for me. I didn't want to go to WWE and make an ass out of myself, even though I'm at the point where I believe in my heart I've done this for long enough and I'd get enough reception from the guys that I consider the greats, let's say Jerry Lynn or Chavo Guerrero, that can put me over and tell me that I'm worthwhile going back to go to work. Sometimes you have to believe the guy, make the guys in the suits believe that you are that good and go there and have the right showing. You can't go there and be just slightly out of shape because it gives them a reason to detract from what you're doing. So this year I made it a point to get back in shape to where the point, where I can go there and be totally confident in everything I do. I always get put over for my promo skills and nobody talks like me. And you saw that on the documentary, Jim Cornette, I gave him goosebumps. There's not many people that can talk on camera the way I do convincingly. And it showed on the documentary. They showed 15 other guys that said, and then there's me who went in and I actually asked to go first. And then I watched and heard all these other guys. And then I got in the ring with them. And I know they're new and green and everything else, and I have a lot more experience, but I've eat, slept, and breathed this since I was 3 years old. There's not, I was asking somebody the other day about, do you know who so-and-so is? And they didn't have any idea about a legend in the business. And I just laughed. I was sitting there with Dave Taylor in Atlanta. And this young kid came up to me and was talking to me and talking about WWE. And I asked him if he knew who Dave Taylor was. He had no idea who Dave Taylor was.
Wow.
And Dave's response was, I was the guy who waved the flag for Regal. And the guy goes, oh, I know who you are. Not knowing Dave's a third-generation badass wrestler. And not knowing any of his history. And there's, when I was in, here's a funny story. When I was in developmental, they gave me this sheet of 100 people involved in the wrestling business. And you had to write a bio about each one. My phone rang off the hook for 2 days because this thing was due. And on the last night at 12 midnight, my phone starts ringing off the hook. Danny, do you know who Tatsumi Fujinami is? Do you know who the Golden Girls were? Do you know who the Jumping Bomb Angels were? Do you know who... And it was just ridiculous stuff that WWE was asking you because they wanted to see how obscure your memory is or if you knew these people in wrestling. And I had to sit there and just tell them, yes, this is so-and-so. So when I went to hand in my report, I said, I don't need to even hand in it. Just ask me anybody that's not on the list. Ask me to be on the list, and I'll just tell you who they are, what they've done. I've wrestled Mil Máscaras, for goddamn it. And he's getting inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Right. That's right.
And by the way, he's the wrestler I've ever worked with in my life.
Wow. Okay.
Mick Foley crapped on him in his book. And you know what? Everything Mick Foley said is totally goddamn true. The most selfish wrestler I've ever wrestled. And I know I'm going to get a lot of heat for saying that, which I don't care about. But, gee, can you be any more selfish? I mean, he's going to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Obviously, they want to wrestle in Mexico a little bit more and have some connections there. But, people probably don't even know who he is. The guys that are asking me, who this person is, who this is, what they do. And I'm giving them, 4 sentences on each guy, here, just write this. People in WWE have no frigging clue about the wrestling business. And that's the problem. And then there's guys like me who know it, have done it, and can make these stupid idiot bodybuilders or fitness models or reality stars look good, and they won't even hire you because God knows why. Stick up their ass, I have no idea.
I want to ask you about TNA, because obviously that's the other major company out there. Have you had any interest in working with them, or maybe vice versa? They've ever brought you in for a tryout or offer you a spot with their company?
I have a lot of friends at TNA. A lot of them are agents there. I've never once reached out to TNA. One of my things is I want to be happy when I'm working, and every single person except the newer guys that are just getting their first chance of being on television, everybody's miserable and the money's horrible. Don't get me wrong. I love to wrestle and I love getting paid, so getting a paycheck from TNA would be great. I'm not putting them down. As a matter of fact, on Sunday, because Jerry Lynn was on the pay-per-view, I actually ordered a TNA pay-per-view for the first time in my life. And all it reminded me of was with the camera angles, the lighting, the wrestling. I mean, the guys worked their asses off. And yet Hulk Hogan still gets the biggest reaction of everybody that walked out of that curtain. I watched Christopher Daniels against AJ Styles, and there was no reaction for anything. Nobody had any heat. No heel had any legit heat. Jerry Lynn is wrestling Rob Van Dam, and I'm watched Impact the week before, and Jerry was even complaining. He felt that he didn't have any heat. And it's true. How do you get beat on television by not even Rob Van Dam, but the guy that's your tag team, his tag team partner, on the show leading up to the pay-per-view? Are you really a big threat to Rob Van Dam, man? Why are the people hating you? It's just the writing and stuff they have makes no sense. It has no, you're insulting common sense of people that are buying tickets to your show.
I thought it would be interesting because you were talking about Dave Lagana, and now Dave Lagana just got hired by TNA, so I thought maybe that could be a connection. But you already got, as you said, you already got friends that are agents, and you certainly have your connections with TNA.
Well, yeah, I do have connections. You know, I never reach out to them, and maybe I will. I mean, like I said, I love to wrestle, and I love to get paid for it, but I don't want to be miserable doing it. So will I reach out to TNA probably soon? Yeah. You know, my friends will probably laugh when they hear this because they're always like, so you'd never work for TNA. You know, to the point where I want to make a living wrestling. That's pretty much my goal.
And you could even springboard it into a WWE contract. You get hot, they could bring in a WWE.
Right. Or you could springboard it to TNA and make them some money where they want to keep you around and pay you.
True.
I mean,
exactly.
It doesn't matter where you work. It doesn't matter the company. It matters if you make money doing what you love and being part of the art of pro wrestling. That's really what interests me. That's really why I loved Ring of Honor when I went to go try out for them, and being a part of that is because you have a locker room that's so hungry. And even though I don't agree with 100% with the style of wrestling, because to me there's more of an art to it, there's more of a, to me it's more like a car crash, because guys are doing things and they don't know why they're doing them. It's just to get a reaction, not a real emotional reaction. They're just getting it for the ooh and the ah. They're not getting it for the heat, the real heel heat or the real baby face sympathy. They don't understand that psychology yet. They will at some point, because there's, 90% of talented people in there. I mean, there's a lot of guys that impressed me at Ring of Honor, you know, guys that broke in right after I did, like the Briscoes. I hadn't seen them work in 8 years. I went and watched the show, and those were two guys I'm like, they have legitimate heel heat. Chris Hero, I've been working 4 or 5 years, and I was just so impressed with him. Edwards and Davey Richards were two of the hardest working guys on the whole show. Seeing Jerry Lynn there all the time, he's Jerry Lynn. He's a legend. I watched him when I was watching Global. I'd run home from high school and go put on ESPN and watch him in 1-2-3 Kid, or Lightning Kid at the time, you know, tear it up on Global, and that's all I couldn't wait to see. So, I mean, there's so much great talent there, but then there's a lot of crap, too.
You've been in the business 18 years. What's, like, the biggest lesson you've learned from being in the business for so long?
The biggest lesson I've ever learned? I don't believe until I get my airline ticket and half of my money up front. That's probably the biggest lesson I've learned.
What do you like away from the ring? We got a chance to kind of see you a little bit, you know, in your apartment. What are you really like away from wrestling?
I write my own comedy. I read a lot of books. I go to the movies all the time. I'm a big wine connoisseur, although if you watch the documentary, you know I got a DUI, and that kind of changed my life.
A video gamer?
I'm not. I just bought my first Wii a couple months ago. That's probably the first video game system I've had in years. So I'm stuck on this Super Mario Brothers game that came with I'm not a big gamer. I'm not a computer nerd. I don't sit on the computer a lot, which is great having a BlackBerry. I know I need to upgrade to this iPhone everybody's talking about. I'm not a big gamer. I don't know. I don't find time in the day to do it. I'm usually trying to get booked and look at wrestling stuff. I watch a lot of wrestling, and it doesn't matter what if it's good or bad. I watch everything so I can learn from it. I have a pit bull who's playing around right now and tearing up my apartment. That's pretty much my life. I don't know. The gym? I'm pretty boring, except whoever's around me, I make them laugh hysterically. That's pretty much it.
We're closing out with Danny Inferno. Let's plug you're on the social media. I know you're on Twitter and Facebook. Why don't you plug that and maybe plug anything you have upcoming, you know, as far as shows. And I'll also mention, too, the re-airing of the documentary again.
Will do. You can get me on Facebook at facebook.com/Danny Gimondo. My last name is Gimondo. You can check that out. You can also check me out in the movie The Wrestler. I'm in the first 15 minutes of it. My name, actually, here's a funny little tidbit. So I'm sitting there, I used to work for a physical therapy place, and my boss was Crowbar. Devin Storm, Crowbar. So we're sitting there one day, and we're watching Millionaire, as we always did, at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. And the question comes up is, what is Mickey Rourke's name in the movie The Wrestler? Is it Randy the Ram? Havoc? Well, I forget what Kate Quick or R-Truth's name is in the movie. His name, and then Inferno. And then my name was one of the questions on Millionaires.
Wow.
Ha ha.
Yeah.
So, my last name is Gimondo. So it's facebook.com/Danny Gimondo. You can get me on Twitter at Danny Gimondo. DanyGimondo. And also coming up on the National Geographic Channel, November 22nd. It will air, so check your local listings on the National Geographic Channel. If you don't have it on your cable, get Dork TV because I know they have it.
Right.
Or get Better Cable because I know they carry it if you have Better Cable. It's Slammed Inside Indie Wrestling. It'll be re-airing again November 22nd. Upcoming, I have, I think this month, for the rest of the month, I took off. I have November 4th for NWS. Check NWSWrestling.com. November 11th, 12th, and 13th, I'll be in North Carolina. I don't have the exact locations yet, but check my Twitter and my Facebook, and I will always post them up. The following weekend, I have a show in New Jersey for NWSWrestling.com. I will be in Atlanta, Georgia, the 19th and 20th, and that is GCW Wrestling. And I will post that up with the website as well. That's called WrestleFest 3. I'll be taking on Mike Taylor, from also another former WWE developmental guy. Luke Gallows will be on the show as well.
And
I got one or two things in December, but nothing worth mentioning. Some probably little indies in New Jersey or New York.
Okay, well,
I think it covers it for the end of the year. My girlfriend made me stop taking wrestling bookings so I can do, like, holiday, girlfriendish, boyfriend-type things.
Important stuff.
I'm going to see Jersey Boys in New York City this weekend. do you know what that is? No, you're like,
no. I have no idea.
It's a pop Broadway show. And she's making me go. So
things you have to do.
I'm like, if there's good wine and a nice dinner involved, cool, I'll go see Jersey Boys. It's a Frankie Valli story or something like that.
Well, if you've not seen the documentary on Nat Geo, I definitely recommend it. I watched it two or three times. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was well produced, well put together. As he said, November 22nd, it'll re-air. Check your local listings. And hopefully we'll see you in future episodes. I think it'd be great to see more of this documentary and see more about your career and your trials of trying to get back into wrestling full-time and possibly getting that WWE contract. So we wish you all the best of luck, and who knows, maybe at some point we'll see you on Raw or SmackDown.
I have a feeling you're going to see me soon on Raw, SmackDown, or NXT, or some internet show pretty soon. or you can email me for bookings at DanyGimondo, that's DanyGimondo@gmail.com. Or if you're just a really hot female and you're bored one night and you live near me or within an 18-hour drive and want to come hang out, that's fine too. My girlfriend won't hear this, so she won't care. Even if she does, she knows I'm a scumbag, so. Just kidding. It's all in sarcasm. I mean, come on. People lighten up. No, but DANNY@gmail.com. Available bookings after New Year. Please watch my show on National Geographic, Slammed Inside Indie Wrestling. It's November 22nd is the re-airing date. If I get a great rating, it's going to go to series, so you'll see more of me on that.
Awesome. Well, definitely follow Danny on the Twitter and Facebook, as you mentioned before. You can check him on Nat Geo on the Indie Circuit. And, Danny, we wish you the best of luck.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.